ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Nightlife. News breakdown.
Well, Federal Parliament question time today. The opposition again targeted Climate Change and Energy Minister Chris Bowen, particularly over his appointment as President of Negotiations. His new title at COP31 next year in Turkey, of course. The minister's just returned to Canberra after travelling to Belém in Brazil, leading the Australian delegation at COP30. Now, the opposition has labelled Chris Bowen a part-time minister, questioning how many days he'll spend overseas next year. This is the opposition leader, Susan Lee.
My question is to the Minister for Climate Change and Energy. And firstly, welcome back to Australia. The coalition.
Order, members on my left.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The coalition thanks the full-time president of COP31 negotiations for taking the time today to make himself available and accountable to the Australian Parliament in his capacity as part-time energy minister.
Order.
Yes, well, Chris Bowen had prepared for this angle of attack and reminded Susan Lee of her own travels representing the country in recent years.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Leader of the Opposition asked me about ministerial travel and criticised me going to Brazil last week and travelling back yesterday, Mr. Speaker, pretty clearly. Apparently,
order.
International trips aren't
appropriate,
Mr. Speaker.
Of the national.
Well, this is a recent development because on the 11th of July 2021, the Minister for the Environment announced that she would be travelling overseas as part of the Morrison government's campaign to stand up for Australia's interests and support the Great Barrier Reef communities and tourism operators ahead of the UNESCO World Heritage Committee meeting. The press release says Minister Lee will visit a number of countries. The press release does not tell us how many countries she visited. We had to read The Australian 2 weeks later to find out Australia's Minister for the Environment, Susan Lee, travelled to more than a dozen countries in recent weeks to secure support. That's what you call a cop-out, Mr. Speaker.
Order.
Yes, order indeed. Joining us for News Breakdown this evening is Mark Kenny, a Canberra Times political analyst and professor at the ANU's Australian Studies Institute. He also hosts the Democracy Sausage podcast. Mark, good evening to you. Welcome back.
Thank you, Philip.
Yes, well, prepared lines indeed. Susan Lee and her opposition colleagues focusing on Chris Bowen, but case of glass houses and throwing of stones, perhaps, do you think?
Yeah, look, it was all pretty good fun, actually. I found it quite amusing, and just listening to the crabs again then, I was sitting here smiling because Susan Lee certainly laid it on with a trowel with her very first question, you know, going on about welcome back and you know, the part-time minister back in town and all this sort of stuff. She got into trouble. There was, you know, points of order and so forth about reflecting negatively or attaching, unnecessary descriptors to ministerial names and so forth. So there's a fair bit of that sort of argy-bargy. But, yes, as you say, Chris Bowen was he's been around the block once or twice, of course, and been in plenty of political battles, and he was ready for it and lined her up with that one and lined a few of the other ones up as the opposition continued to hammer that theme, including Dan Tehan pointing out that, you know, he'd talked about the importance of Australia showing leadership and being, you know, actively participating in negotiations around the world and so forth. So, yes, it was an attack that the opposition, I think, probably felt like it landed a few punches, but it probably copped a few as well.
Yes, indeed. You've written an analysis piece on the Liberals. You're describing it as a potential Kodak moment, as in the giant organisation which worked successfully for decades, then hit by change and not adapting fast enough. Is this how you're seeing the Liberal Party nationally at the moment?
Well, it's a party that's in a lot of trouble. If we look at the polls, it's getting about 24%. If you take off that 24% for the coalition in the last two news polls, you take 4% off that, which and a bit more, which is the Nats part of the overall coalition vote. And you look at One Nation on 18% or thereabouts, which is a record high for One Nation. The Libs are not tracking too well. I mean, they're sort of near enough to level pegging with One Nation, about which we might come to in a moment. But So you've got that. You've got the fact that they are, you know, as has been pointed out, if there was a division, in, as there is often, you know, the bells ring in Parliament House, people rush from their offices to be in the chamber for a vote. All the Labor blokes could stay in their office and just the women arrive there, the Labor women, and they've still got the numbers to defeat the coalition. That's how much the swing, the seat differential is between them, 94 seats to 43, a 51-seat majority. I think it's 54 women in Labor's lower house caucus. So it's a party that's got, you know, and that's compared to 6 women in the Liberal party room caucus, or, you know, on the floor of the House of Representatives. So it's a party that's got real troubles looking representative. It's numerically challenged. It's moving to the right in a bid to sort of establish some sort of market differentiation. Susan Lee was trying to adopt a position of tacking back toward the centre, as she said she wanted to upon taking the leadership, but that didn't presumably involve walking away from net zero by 2050. So I think if it were a company and you were looking at all of that, you'd say, do I want to own this stock at the moment? I don't think so.
All right, to other parliamentary matters today. Pauline Hanson's been suspended from Parliament for 7 days for the burqa stunt. The censure motion passed by Labor, the Greens and a lone Liberal noted her behaviour was intended to vilify and mock people on the basis of religion. So she won't be back until Parliament resumes in 2026. Not that she says that she's concerned about that.
I'm censured. Does it really worry me? No, it doesn't. For 7 days, not at all.
Not bothering with me. At an impromptu press conference she held shortly afterwards, she doubled down.
It is not a religious requirement to wear the burqa. Many imams have actually stated that. So they don't know what they're talking about. And to comment and call me a racist is completely, you know, have no idea what they're talking about.
Other MPs from a range of parties have expressed outrage, though. Social Services Minister Tanya Plibersek told of her concern that the stunt might have on Muslim women and girls, and Senator Fatima Payman, who is a Muslim, described her burqa stunt as disgraceful and disrespectful. This is her.
It's almost 10 years since Senator Hanson's pathetic, pathetic stunt where she wore a burqa in the Senate. And there were no Muslim women at that time in the Senate. Well, we are here now. We are here to stay. And we will make sure that no Muslim woman is policed for what she wears.
I think that was actually Senator Maureen Faruqi, but Faruqi, there we go.
Yeah.
Yes. Mark, this second iteration of her burqa in Parliament stunt is being called out by many in and out of Parliament as a try-hard publicity stunt, but I wonder whether... I was puzzled by it a bit myself. She's got very high polling numbers. Is this going to improve things or maybe not?
It's really hard to know. One wonders whether this was planned for some time, whether, you know, it sort of makes any has any relationship to the polling numbers. I suspect, my guess would be that One Nation is cock-a-hoop, to use an old-fashioned expression, about its, you know, surge in the polls. And it's breathed some new energy and optimism into Pauline's belief about her party and its prospects, and she's decided to go out and try and attract a bit more attention. But I don't know that it's you know, we'll have to wait and see as to how this plays out. But I would have thought if your poll numbers are sort of shooting up on the basis of what you're doing, you wouldn't suddenly dramatically change what you're doing, revisit a highly controversial strategy from, as Maureen Faruqi said, nearly a decade ago, which alienated a lot of people and unsettled a lot more. So, you know, it's an odd sort of strategy. But, look, she's an inveterate sort of attention seeker. That's been her political approach. She's not a legislator. She doesn't have any impact on the laws of the nation or on the sort of rigour of parliamentary scrutiny of bills and so forth. This is a populist party, and it's got there by being a party of protest and stunts, and I guess that's how she means to continue.
Yes, one other critical voice expressing displeasure over the burqa stunt is National Senator Matt Canavan. Now, he says it ought to convince National MP Barnaby Joyce, a wayward character at the moment, as we know, has been courted by Senator Hanson to join One Nation, to think twice about the idea.
Even Barnaby couldn't defend Pauline yesterday, right? He was asked and he refused to comment. And I mean, come on, Barnaby. I mean, do you really want to go and join the circus?
Well, Senator Hanson did cook Barnaby Joyce a steak in, very oddly, a sandwich press in her office, but whether or not it was enough to win him over is moot for the time being, although Barnaby says he'll make a decision about his political future by the end of the week, presumably once he's digested the steak.
I just don't want much of a circus here. The circus is enough, and I'll get to the end of the week and we'll make a decision then.
Yes, well, does Wagyu on the Breville do the trick, Mark, do you think?
I guess that's how they cook them in the circus, to use Matt Canavan's description
what about,
of one.
What about the old sunbeam fry pan? Surely that's a better option, isn't it?
I would have thought so. It'd be more fitting with, more in keeping with One Nation's general presentation of kind of 1950s, 1960s sort of vibe. My dad used to, you know, get out the fry pan and already had the fat in it, you know, sitting in the sort
Well,
of
the sunbeams, it's a very good appliance. There's no,
that's
no,
right. You flick it on and it all goes clear and you put the meat in there. Yes, it was. Look, it's a very odd thing. I have seen some strange meals served. I've been to one or two meals with members of parliament, sort of prominent backbenchers or whatever, who, you know, put on the odd meal for colleagues and the occasional journalistic interloper. And you do see some pretty kind of caravan-like sort of, you know, appliances get used, because the officers, they have little sort of vaguely kitchenette-type things and bathroom and so forth, the suites for MPs, but they're not really set up for entertaining in that way. So I guess she made the most of it, and she and Barnaby, I mean, it's a pretty odd mix. You know, Wagyu beef, I assume, is pretty expensive, pretty high-end stuff. The old sandwich press is a little bit of an unorthodox way of going about it. But
yeah. Hey, you're in Canberra. Of course, there could be some public servants wondering about their jobs over Christmas. Finance Minister Senator Katie Gallagher's had to respond to reports that she's directed public service agencies to outline sweeping spending cuts. Now, she's denying that federal departments and agencies are having to face up to a 5% spending cut. In the lead up to the May federal election, Labor did pledge to save $6.4 billion by cutting back on consultants, contractors and travel. This is the Minister, Katie Gallagher.
There's no cuts. This is not a 5% cut. What we've asked agencies to do is have a look at what they're doing and make room for reprioritisation. It's an exercise in discipline around how we manage budgets.
Well, there you go. Reprioritisation, Mark. Is that it?
There's always some great words around these kinds of decisions. A lot of it can be, well, let's call it sophistry or you know, clever packaging or whatever. But the government does assure its electorate. And let's not forget that Katie Gallagher is an ACT senator.
She is.
And she's one who relies on preferences to get elected, or at least last time had to, didn't get a quota in her own right, if my memory serves me correctly. She was under a bit of pressure from David Pocock, the other ACT senator. So it's got some very interesting local sort of political electoral ramifications, this. But the government says, as you heard in that grab, that it's not about cutting jobs. It's about driving efficiency. She says they've instructed agencies to look for ways of getting efficiencies up toward that 5% range. The government, of course, is you know, next month going to release a mid-year economic update, and then obviously in May of next year we're looking at a budget. And all of this, I think, adds up to the prospect of a budget that could be probably, I think Labor's had four budgets so far, pretty harsh inflationary environment for the first term, and sort of, I guess you'd say, difficult political circumstance, or at least potentially difficult. The government wasn't travelling well through 2024, but of course stormed home in the election this year. But I think the signs are such that we might be looking at a tougher budget that's coming in May next year. We might not know much about that in the mid-year economic update that's coming next month, but by May of next year we may be looking at a fair bit of spending restraint coming into it. And, of course, the Reserve Bank is, you know, watching all of this a bit carefully as well. Where we were looking at rate cuts before, there's, you know, murmurs about the possibility of rate rises if inflation gets out of control. So, yeah, it's an interesting point in the cycle. Labor, as we said before, has a huge majority. And if there is a time to to do is take some tough economic decisions or fiscal decisions, then perhaps it's the first budget
after you've been elected.
Big majority.
Yeah. Look, away from domestic concerns, the Ukraine's ambassador to Australia, Vasyl Miroshnichenko, has spoken today about the peace talks underway in Geneva. Apparently, US and Ukrainian negotiators say they've created an updated peace framework to end the Russian-Ukraine war. It looked on the surface that it was just a list of Russian demands. But anyway, apparently that's been tweaked. The ambassador insists that Russia can't be rewarded for its aggression. Russian President Vladimir Putin's made his demands known, as we know. But the ambassador says Ukraine is never going to agree to such terms.
In order to end this war and in order to make sure that the peace is sustainable, is just and lasting, we need to create deterrence. And that deterrence comes from strong military. That deterrence comes from security guarantees from the US government, as well as security guarantees from our European allies.
Hmm. There seems to be some, I don't know, you can hardly use the word optimism here, Mark, but some suggestion that there could be some developments here on maybe some sort of deal.
I think, as you say, some suggestion maybe. It is really vague at the moment. I mean, they're putting an effort in,
aren't they? I mean, they're meeting.
Yeah. They are. Look, it's very difficult. This, we saw what happened to Zelensky when he went to the White House before and wasn't prepared to sort of be dictated to by the president, by President Trump. And so I think you see a much different approach to the way the Ukrainians are handling this. They don't want to frontally dismiss things. They don't want to be seen to be impossible to deal with, to be too inflexible, because that risks simply giving Trump the reason to walk away and say, oh, well, bugger you, you know, it's, just yesterday, the day before, I saw Trump saying that if this doesn't work, he can go on fighting his little heart out. Now, that was a thing to say, but that was quite clearly directed at Zelensky. So I think what you're getting from the Ukrainians is they're trying to hold the line. They're trying to take the terms of this proposed arrangement back towards something they can accept.
Yeah.
They're a long way from it, but they don't want to be seen to be saying that up front, because it could backfire on them. So it really is what that 28-point plan really did look like. It came, and there was some talk that it may actually have directly come from the Russians. It was a real wish list. And if you read what the Ukrainians are saying now, you know, they're saying you cannot reward Putin for an illegal war and taking territory, which sounds to me to be completely reasonable proposition to resist. But, that's where it is.
That's where it is. All right, Mark, good to talk as always. Thank you.
Good on you, Philip. Thank you.
Mark Kenny's Canberra Times political analyst with us for the Nightlife News Breakdown.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife. Yeah.